Asher Price, our guest in that first half hour from Austin, Texas, talking about his book, Year of the Dunk. We go to Seattle. Steve Steinberg is with us, baseball historian, who, along with Lyle Spatz, has put together a really, really marvelous read. It's called The Colonel and Hug, The Partnership That Transformed the New York Yankees. University of Nebraska Press put the book out. Steve, really nice to visit with you, and I hope things are well.
Thank you, Pat. Glad to be on your show.
So who was the Colonel and who was Hug?
Well, the Colonel was Jacob Rupert, who bought the Yankees back in early 1915. He actually never served in the military, but he was in the National Guard and aide to the governor of New York, and he owned the largest, if not, or possibly one of the largest breweries in the United States when he bought the Yankees. And Hug was the nickname for Miller Huggins, the little, very small physically manager that he hired 3 years later. And Huggins took the Yankees with Rupert to their first six pennants and three world championships in the 1920s.
Who was Rupert's partner with the Yankees?
Rupert had a partner by the name of Till Houston. They were two very different kinds of guys. Houston was an engineer, made a lot of money in Cuba after the Spanish-American War. And they each were 50%, and they were guys that were not used to sharing power. In retrospect, it may not have been that great an idea. And Rupert bought Houston out in 1923.
How did they work together?
You know, that's a great question. I wish I could have been a fly on the wall there, because each of them was a 50% owner, and Rupert seemed to carry whenever there was a conflict. And my sense is, and this is just a supposition, is that Rupert, being more of a businessman, perhaps was able to wear Houston down. Houston was more of a seat-of-the-pants kind of guy, as I said, it just didn't work out between them.
What was the Rupert-Miller-Huggins relationship like?
Well, it became a very special and close one, and the focus of our book. There was a great mutual trust that the two men had, and without it, the Yankees wouldn't have risen where they were and may not even be where they are today.
What made Huggins a good manager?
Huggins, first of all, he had the ability to really spot talent and to nurture talent, and he had a way of doing that. We even discussed in the book, for example, that Lou Gehrig came very close to quitting early in his career, and Huggins kept on encouraging him. Tony Lazzeri, another great Yankee, credited Huggins with making him as a player, and Huggins had terrific patience, but also he had very small ego, and he was willing to let the players, including the biggest headliner of all, Babe Ruth, gather those headlines while he just operated in the shadows. And both he and Rupert, for that reason, have been overlooked in the baseball literature.
My guest is Steve Steinberg. What do you write about the Yankees' acquisition of Babe Ruth from Boston, Steve? Anything new?
Well, I'm not sure if it's new. We do, and I think we mentioned it, Lyle and I, in our earlier book, 1921, that Huggins, to his credit, was a creature of the dead ball era, where before the home runs were flying all over the place, and he led the National League as a player, for example, in walks four different times. But he saw the potential in Ruth and told Rupert to get him if he could, and when Ruth became available. Rupert said to Huggins, "You're crazy, $100,000 for a ball player." And Huggins' answer, which we talk about in the book, was, "The one who's crazy is the owner of the Red Sox for letting you have Ruth for so little money."
How did Hug and Ruth get along?
Well, I think Huggins knew when he was acquiring Ruth that he was going to get a handful, and Ruth continually pushed the envelope and frustrated Huggins. And when Huggins died prematurely, his sister made the statement that, "I think that big fella took 5 years off my brother's life." Mm. And Huggins gave him a lot of space, and Ruth really had his own rules, which was almost no rules at all. But it really wasn't working, even though they won three pennants that way. And in 1925, Huggins had what I consider a moment of truth for the organization, where he had a showdown with Ruth. And actually, after suspending him and things getting straightened out between them, you know, who was the boss, they really had a pretty darn close relationship the last few years of Huggins' life.
Didn't Ruth go to Rupert and try and get the fine rescinded?
Yeah, when he was suspended, Ruth immediately went to the brewery. And Huggins, Rupert, by the way, operated even his Yankee business out of the brewery. He rarely came to the Yankees' offices. And Ruth thought that Rupert would back him up and fire Huggins. And they closed the door. And when they came out shortly thereafter, Ruth had a rather sheepish look on his face. And Huggins and Rupert basically said, you know, Miller Huggins is running the club, and if Ruth wants to quit, he can quit. So Rupert did back him up at that point. And like I said, it's not very common that this happens, that you know, an owner with a superstar is going to back up the manager and tell the superstar to take a hike if he needs to. But ultimately, it helped the Yankees, and it really helped Ruth recharge and rekindle his career.
How did Huggins die?
Huggins was never a well man to begin with, and when you look at pictures, and we have a number of rare and unusual ones in the book, in his late 40s, he looked like a guy perhaps in his early 70s, and he had an infection under his eye, which became blood poisoning, and late in the 29th season, he would sit under a heat lamp before games trying to bake it out, and keep in mind, this is before antibiotics. And he finally did check himself into the hospital, but it was too late, and I think within 3 days he was dead. The infection just went through his body and took his life.
And we don't know really what it was?
Well, I'm not a doctor. The medical term, I think, was called erysipelas. It was an mm-hmm. inflammation, and we actually, I think, have the medical description in there. It was an infection that spread throughout his bloodstream, and basically, without antibiotics, which we take for granted today, he couldn't fight it. And he actually, early in 1921, had a touch of a similar kind of thing, and did recover from it. But like I said, we take so many things for granted now with infections that back then were life-threatening.
Steve Steinberg and Lyle Spatz have put together a classic book. It's called The Colonel and Hug, the partnership that transformed the New York Yankees. It's a must-read if you're a baseball fan. Steve Steinberg is our guest. So how did the ball club react? How did the Yankee fans react? How did Rupert react when Miller Huggins died?
Well, they were pretty devastated. Rupert didn't even know how he could replace Huggins, and there was an interim manager for a year, and then Rupert, to his credit, made a brilliant hire in Joe McCarthy. One of the real strengths of Rupert, we talked about Huggins for a bit earlier, was that, you know, he made a handful of hires as an executive or owner of any company. The guys that are your direct reports are crucial, and he hired two managers in Huggins and McCarthy that were brilliant. He hired Ed Barrow as a baseball operations precursor of the general manager, and he hired George Weiss to run his farm system. So the Yankees, including Ruth, took it very hard. And Ruth really was fond of Huggins. And as I said, after 25, their relationship did really have a strong understanding, which let them get closer.
How did Rupert and Ed Barrow relate to each other? How did that work?
Well, Ed Barrow was certainly a key factor in the equation here. He has a fine biography by a colleague of mine, Dan Levitt. And Rupert really worked with Barrow, even though Barrow was a very different personality than Huggins, the same way Rupert worked with Huggins and later on with Weiss and McCarthy, and that is he hired capable guys and he got out of the way and he let them do their jobs. And Barrow did a lot of the negotiations of the contracts. He also built up an incredible scouting staff, and after the mid-20s, when the Yankees had gotten a lot of talent from the Red Sox, they needed scouting because there wasn't any talent left in the major leagues that was either willing to trade with the Yankees. So, again, Rupert had a great working relationship with Barrow, who went on for the rest of Rupert's life as the Yankee executive.
Tell me about Joe McCarthy.
Well, Huggins dies in 1929, and even though the partnership ends at that point, we do delve into the 1930s, and McCarthy came on board a year later. And the remarkable thing is that in many ways, McCarthy as different as he may seem on the surface from Huggins, they had some remarkable similarities. I mean, McCarthy also had a terrific commitment to win and just didn't accept second place, which Huggins never did and Rupert never did. And McCarthy also could nurture talent. And I think McCarthy also had could sublimate his ego enough to deal with some very big stars on the Yankees.
Steve Steinberg is our guest, the baseball historian, author of The Colonel and Hug. Tell me about Rupert's Brewery, Steve. I found that quite intriguing.
Yeah, Rupert, his family had started the brewery, his father, and then Jacob Jr. His father was actually Jacob Rupert also. And Rupert really built it up to an enormous brewery. And in those days, the beer was pretty much distributed where it was made. There was a lot of changes that came about in the 1930s that let beer be trucked across the country. But Rupert had in the Upper East Side, the neighborhood was called Yorkville, a German-American neighborhood, which still is a German-American neighborhood. And he ran that brewery and in many ways probably carried some of those business principles over to running the Yankees.
Steve Steinberg is with us. His book, The Colonel and Hug. We've got another segment with Steve, so stay with us. You're listening to Inside the Game. I'm your host, Pat Williams. It's AM 660, The Answer in Orlando. Steve Steinberg is with us from Seattle. He and Lyle Spatz have written the book, The Colonel and Hug, the partnership that transformed the New York Yankees. What were your feelings, Steve, fairly recently when Colonel Rupert went into the Baseball Hall of Fame?
Well, it was obviously long overdue, and we used to talk about Miller Huggins as taking forever because he died in 29 and didn't get in the hall until 64. Mm. But compared to the length of time that it took for Rupert to be recognized, Huggins got in relatively quickly. But, they finally have gotten the recognition. Again, neither man was really in the headlines when you had Ruth and Gehrig and later on, DiMaggio, really capturing all the headlines.
What was Rupert's personal life like?
Well, Rupert, like Huggins, was a single man. He was a very wealthy guy, and he led a life of wealth, even though he was a hard-working guy. And he lived on the Upper East Side, right on Fifth Avenue near Central Park, had a mansion. And he lived with his mother until she passed in the mid-20s, and then moved into an apartment building that was built right across the street from him, which is still standing. And he went out and socialized a lot. He loved boxing. Matter of fact, after Yankee Stadium was built, he was a regular not only at the championship matches, but would go into the dressing rooms of both of the fighters after the fight. And he would appear at a lot of different events, oftentimes with a very attractive young woman, even though he never did marry, and the relationships with women, we delve into this a little bit, may have been more platonic than anything. We lay out the evidence and really let the reader sort of make some conclusions for himself on that.
Who was the young woman?
Well, there were different young women at different times. Then he really had a regular woman by the name of Helen Wayant, and it's a little bit unclear exactly how Rupert met. Supposedly her father and Rupert were good friends, and she was considerably younger than him, I think 30-some-odd years younger than him, and had been had a couple small roles in Broadway shows. And Rupert had a state upstate in New York in Garrison, and when he left, when he died, he left a third of his estate to Helen Wayant, and the press was really pretty surprised. They didn't know who she was, and it was, especially in the tabloids, you know, quite a story. He left the other two-thirds, a third each, to two of his nieces. But Helen Wayne would regularly accompany him every Friday afternoon when he would have a limo and pick her up, and they would go up to Garrison, and she was more or less the hostess at his mansion upstate.
Is that mansion still standing? Could we take a Colonel Rupert tour, Steve, and see much?
You know, the mansion is still there, and I'm forgetting the name. It was the family donated it to a church group, and we do mention that, I believe, in one of our endnotes. We have a lot of endnotes in the book, and I think, as so often happens, the property taxes were so onerous, and they were basically the estate was donated, and it is run as an institution by a church.
What became of Colonel Houston?
Well, Rupert bought him out. They had a showdown after the 1922 World Series where the Yankees were swept, and Houston, probably somewhat inebriated, shouted in a very crowded New York bar that Miller Huggins had managed his last game as a Yankee. And at that point, Rupert, his reaction was, he pounded on the table and said, the manager next year for the Yankees, I'll tell you who it is. His name is Miller Huggins. So Houston was bought out. There were rumors that he was going to get back in the game, possibly buying the Brooklyn Dodgers or even the New York Giants, which would be a little bit less likely. And he had close friends in baseball, and I think he still attended a lot of games and lived into the mid-1930s. And but he and Rupert did not have a good relationship, even though publicly and in the press it appeared to be cordial.
So what about that name, the Colonel? How did he draft that? Do you think you and I could do that, Steve? You could be Colonel Steinberg?
Well, you know, I think he enjoyed it a lot, and he was an aide to Governor, I think it was Governor Flowers in New York, and more as an attaché and an aide, and Rupert just really enjoyed that title. He, by the way, before he bought the Yankees around the turn of the century, he served four terms in Congress, fairly nondescript. There's not a lot of controversy or fame surrounding any things that bills that he was associated with. He was more known as one of the millionaire eligible bachelors who would appear at the White House for different social events. He liked the title, and the title stuck.
That's interesting. Boy, he did a lot of things in his life, didn't he?
Well, he did a lot of things, and he always wanted to do them best. He raised St. Bernard dogs, and he had some of the finest St. Bernards that would win the Westminster Kennel Club show. He also raced horses, he and his father, earlier in his life, and ultimately got out of it, and we explore some of the reasons why he did. But one thing was that, you know, he wanted to be number one, and ultimately, even though he was wealthy, he didn't have the kinds of deep pockets that the Astors or the Whitneys or the Hayes had, and they were dominating horse racing. With the Yankees, it gave him something that he really craved, and that was, you know, recognition as having, you know, the greatest team in the world.
What's next for you, Steve? You guys dive into these fascinating topics. Do you have something else that's burning to come out?
Well, Lyle and I have been, you know, considering doing a third book together. We work so well together, even though he's in Florida and I'm in Seattle in the digital age. That's not a problem. But we haven't really come up with something. I've got a couple other projects that that I want to get done also. And Lyle is independently, actually. He just came out with a Willie Keeler bio.
Did he?
And he's now working on a Hugh Casey biography, the pitcher who threw the famous pitch that got away in the 41 World Series and who later took his own life. Should be a fascinating study. So my period focuses more, you know, on the early 20th century, and we may do something again together, Lyle and myself.
Who did he do the Keeler book with? Nebraska?
No, he did it with Roman and Littlefield, and that's who I believe he's doing the Casey book with also. They've been doing some nice baseball books. The Keeler one came out a few months ago, probably late last year, and it's a good read.
My guest is Steve Steinberg. We're talking about the Colonel and Hug, the partnership that transformed the Yankees. How did Rupert react when people said, you're killing baseball because the Yankees are so good and they dominate? How did Rupert react to that?
Well, Rupert reacted very simply that if other teams or fans of other teams are complaining, what they should do is they should make their teams better, not handicap the Yankees. And, you know, there was talk about breaking up the Yankees after they won their third straight pennant in 1928, and those same calls would return a decade later. And Rupert, I don't think we included in this book, he had one statement at one time, which he said Fritz Kreisler, who was a famous violinist at the time, he said, you know, you don't break Kreisler's violin, you hope to make and develop and train another Kreisler. So Rupert was very adamant about that, and also adamant about the fact that, you know, other teams had money, but it took more than money, you know, to create a winner, that it took, you know, it took talent and management skill, and he was, you know, certainly not going to break up his club.
Steve Steinberg and Lyle Spatz, the Colonel and Hug. I'm interested, Steve. 1929, 1930, 1931, Connie Mack's A's become a dominant team. They win three straight American League pennants. I wonder how the Colonel reacted to that.
Well, that's a great question, because not only was that difficult, not coming in first place, and Rupert at one point said second place might as well be seventh or eighth place. But not only that, but the Yankees between 29 and 35, a seven-year stretch, only won one pennant. It was not easy for him, but give Rupert incredible credit, because he believed in Joe McCarthy just like he believed in Huggins. And in 34, when the Yankees, it was the second year in a row since they won in 32, there were calls for Babe Ruth to take over the team, and Rupert backed up McCarthy and stuck with him, and was rewarded with four championships in the late 30s. I think Rupert instinctively knew if he had the right guy, he wasn't going to let the employees decide who's going to run the organization, and he stuck with McCarthy, and he was rewarded. It took a while because, like you said, Connie Mack had a dynasty, and then, of course, the Tigers were powerful in 34 and 35.
What kind of a manager would Babe Ruth have been?
Boy, that's a tough one. There's a famous statement, I think it was Ed Barrow had said, you know, if he can't manage himself, how could he manage a club? Ruth did settle down when he remarried in the late 1920s, but he felt that he deserved a shot because a lot of great ball players, including Ty Cobb and Tris Speaker, were managers. They were player managers. I don't think in any way he would have, approached McCarthy or a Huggins. And he might have had a hard time disciplining the guys. It's always hard to be one of the fellas, and then, especially in Ruth's case, and then all of a sudden be their boss.
Well, it's fun to chat with you, Steve. I read this book and wanted to talk to you, and we've been able to do that. It's a terrific read. The Colonel and Hug, the partnership that transformed the New York Yankees. Steve Steinberg and Lyle Spatz have put it together, and Steve has been our guest here from his home in Seattle. Good to talk to you, Steve. I wish you all the best.
Thank you, Pat.
We will be back, folks, next weekend for more Inside the Game on AM 660, The Answer, here in Orlando. I'm your host, Pat Williams. Have a great week ahead.
AM 660, The Answer, WORL, Altamont Springs, Orlando. A service of Salem Communications. Intelligent, conservative, AM 660, The Answer. It's 2 o'clock.